Let me talk for 5-10 minutes on one quote that I wanted to use for the lecture today, but what I'd like to do is just talk on it about 5 or 10 minutes, and then maybe we'll open up to others to talk on the same topic as you brought up. I mean, everything that you're saying and we're talking about in terms of what seems to be getting stuck in judgment against those who may see the human matrix or the matrix of lies and deception and control, see that more clearly than others, becoming stuck in judgmentalism of those who don't, such as, you know, friends and family who believe what they're told by the media or by government. Like 911 official story, or all sorts of things, you know, spreading freedom and democracy throughout the world. Meanwhile, millions are murdered by militarism, U.S. Western militarism, and people who don't see that, and then getting stuck in judgmentalism. Those stupid sheeple, the fucking people, I hate them. Da 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 da. That kind of thing. It's inevitable. I think that people get stuck in that kind of anger repeatedly. There is a metaphysical basis for that, or there's a psychological basis that I think is reflected in a quote from Dostoevsky, the Russian writer, Fyodor Dostoevsky, and this was from the book Crime and Punishment, and I'll send a link, and you can see it's just one simple quote, and it's in the middle of dialogue about all sorts of other things. And the original Russian can be translated a couple of ways, but mainly is this. Pain and suffering are always inevitable for a large intelligence and a deep heart. The really great men must, I think, have great sadness on earth. Dostoevsky. And that was the main character, I think, in the book. And the character was, I think, Rodion Raskolnikov. And that's a long story. Another translation is, suffering and pain are always obligatory for a broad mind and a deep heart. Truly great people, I think, must feel a great sadness in the world. And I think that's absolutely true. So we're talking about experience of suffering and pain, pain and suffering. And there's a difference, right? So pain is inevitable loss, inevitable coming from a loss of what's cherished or loved, or the presence of the disharmonious or disruptive or aggressive or harmful and being unable to get rid of it. So loss of not having what we desire that is heartful or of love or goodness for us, and not being able to get it, and having the experience of the harmful or the disharmonious, which, you know, includes anger and suffering or pain of others, and not being able to be free of it or end the suffering of others. Pain and suffering, always obligatory or always inevitable or unavoidable and inescapable, for the mind, for the being with a broad mind or intelligence, large intelligence or broad mind, and a deep heart, which is basically fifth chakra, fourth chakra, the blue-green center. Mind, intelligence, awareness, discernment, sensitivity to what is, seeing clearly, deep comprehension, and a deep heart. Which really means feeling, the capacity to feel much, to feel great, to feel emotion strongly, to feel sensation in the body strongly, to feel subtle dynamics also, right? Like contradiction, or inevitable, you know, things that are subtle that other people may not feel. And that's, you know, those that are aware of the subtle and those that are not. And the reality of being aware of the subtle in a world of people who generally are not, right? So people say, why does that bother you? Well, we may be seeing certain things that they're not seeing, or we're just sensitive in ways they're not, or we have our own psychodynamics or whatever it may be. We're not purified or perfected fully, obviously, but the inevitability of pain and suffering that comes in for those of us in this world who are developing fourth and fifth chakras. Then, truly great people or great man, whether it's people or man, greatness, which is really, moral intellectual, which is fifth and fourth chakra, moral 4, intellectual 5. That greatness, if it's born of blue green center or blue green development, inevitably feeling great sadness in this world. And the anger that people get stuck in, that we get stuck in regularly, is inevitable because of sensitivity and understanding, seeing contradictions, seeing hypocrisy, seeing deception. Where many people don't see it, they don't feel any pain because they don't see it. They don't know they're being lied to. They're happy, maybe. They may be happy in the audience cheering for their candidate, while somebody next to them, or the one with greater intelligence and deeper heart, may well be very unhappy or in a lot of angst because they can see they're being lied to in real time. So we watch the television and we may feel angst that we see the lies and hypocrisy. The person next to us thinks nothing, they feel fine. Why? Because they're not seeing what we're seeing. Are we seeing truth that they can't see? Are we making it up? Are we projecting? We have to figure that out ourselves. But it can be true, of course, that we see something that 99 out of 100 don't see. Yeah, sure. That's called when people are fully awakened, that's what they do. We're not fully awakened, but we're on that way. And so the more we continue to develop, the more sensitive we become, or the deeper the heart and feeling, and the greater the intelligence or seeing, knowing, or sensitivity to what is, comprehension, and the more suffering we may well feel. And when the mind doesn't want to feel the suffering, it can often go to anger, or it can go to hopelessness, depression, which is a kind of hardened sadness or sorrow. So suffering and pain and suffering always come to those, are inevitable for us or anyone developing green blue centers in this world. Because we feel more, we ache more, because we know also what love is more. And we can see the contrast between what's going on and what we know love to be. Likewise, we also can see truth more, and we're more discerning and see some levels of the situation, that others don't see. And so when Ra was asked, by Don what to do, how to be with the people who are sleeping, Ra said, we would simply help them sleep more comfortably. Why? Because they want to sleep. Which means they don't want to be instructed, or they don't want to hear our perspectives. They don't want to hear or see or know or learn or consider more than their current view. Fine, no problem. The matter will be for us to go through sadness to greater love, wisdom, peace, tranquility, or equanimity, to make peace with. And so getting stuck in sadness, or sadness being inevitable, and regularly getting stuck in anger, rage, frustration, irritation, condemnatory judgment, criticism, complaining. Okay, fine. It happens. And like we said, it's okay to vent it. We can vent against the world, we can vent against the venters. All right, vent, vent. Fine. Then what? Then, for me, I make peace with living, having chosen to be in this world at this time with these people as they are. And see that, I have a lot of work to do, or much development to do or to come. And I'm just learning too. And there's much to learn, but not necessarily facts and figures. The learning of being, you know, the learning of being in peace, or learning of being that is the basis of being at peace or making peace with. How do you make peace with, you know, the negativity in the world or people wanting to sleep? Well, I think we need the big picture. That it's certainly well within their free will, it's in their right to be as they are. And it's our decision to have come here at this time with them here. That's why we're experiencing them with us here. We're here with them, they're here with us. We chose it. Fine. And then allowing, you know, periodic ventings. I think again, mixing the diet a bit in terms of what we pay attention to. And so there's a it's helpful. I mean, I find it's very important to go into geopolitics. I want to know. I don't want to be confused about some things. Other things I'm fine to not know much about at all, and it just doesn't matter because I know it is or it isn't, or I know enough as it is, and that's enough for me. And somebody else can go into the details, but I'm not that interested. And other things we want to go in. But, you know, the sadness is inevitable. It's like Howard Storm and the angel, Howard Storm and the being with him. Every time in the life review, Howard Storm was seen to have hurt someone or hurt himself, the angel or the entity with him felt some sadness. Not criticism, not depression, not happiness, but sadness. And every time Howard Storm did something, was seen to have done something during the life review that was good for himself and others, the angel sort of cheered on or felt heartened and shared some sense of being pleased, the experience of being pleased and kind of seconding it, like sympathetic joy. Like, I'm happy, you're happy. I'm well, you're well. And I think that's a more developed attitude than our complaining or our getting stuck in sadness or depression, you know, hopelessness. But I think it, you know, it is inevitable that we'll feel a lot of sadness here. And yet, walking around in sadness all day is not going to be helpful. And I think it's a matter of perspective, where we can go, we can see the diseased trees in the forest, but we realize that the whole forest is not diseased at all. There are some sick trees that are dying. And there are some sick animals that are dying. And there are some areas of the forest that are burned out and uninhabitable. And it's sad. And yet those are trees and portions of the forest, not the whole forest, nor the planet, nor the world. We can accept it. But actually, you see, you really need a multi-incarnational, many lifetimes view, and a multi-dimensional, many dimensions view, I think, to make peace with all, you know, to make peace with living on Earth, or make peace with all that we see and experience on Earth. Because it really just doesn't make sense if we are a materialist worldview. So the linkage between sadness and well-developed green ray, blue ray, I think is very important to consider. And again, I think that anger, frustration, complaining, judging, represents an unwillingness to feel that sadness. It's a defense mechanism. It's easier. Because there is a sense of weakness or collapse associated with sadness, and that's what is being avoided. The pain of sadness is pain, And then there's a sense of weakening and the fear of greater collapse. Meaning, if I stay in the sadness, I will feel weaker and weaker, or I dread or fear I'll feel weaker and weaker and collapse or be unable to function. And that can happen. That's called depression. But it's not inevitable. Navigating the ship of mind, you know, the ship of state of mind, as we increasingly see and hear, as we're talking about seeing with the heart and hearing with the mind, broad mind, deep intelligence, strong intelligence, deep intelligence, broad mind, great intelligence, deep heart, seeing, feeling, hearing, knowing, eyes and ears, heart and mind, green and blue, as those grow, we'll feel more sorrow. And we may get stuck more often in anger. Okay. So we get more stuck in anger, or we get stuck more often in anger, or the anger is even sharper or stronger than before. Okay. Let's not get stuck in getting stuck. It's okay to get stuck. It's inevitable to get stuck in the avoidance of sorrow, called judgment, anger, criticism, blaming, hating, you know, complaining. It's inevitable to get stuck. But when we know we're stuck, we can, just like when we know, you know, we've forgotten the breath, we can go back to the breath, we can go back to the moment contains love, like Ross said. But we can't tell anybody that unless they want to hear it. Or we can, but it's useless. And so, like we said, there is no real collective solution outside of individual seeking. And Ross said, service is effective only to the degree it is requested. And if people don't request, it's better to let them sleep or let them be, I think. And I think that's what Ra was saying. So that's something just to bring into the discussion. And let me close that here. Yeah, this is actually another topic that I could do a lecture on, not today, but discernment versus judgment, where discernment would be accurate measurement of a relative development, versus judgment, that is blame and a kind of identity devaluing, like stupid versus low intelligence, right? If you say, you know, I can feel the dark shadow of political correctness in my mind talking this way, like I did when I talked last week about this Dunning-Kruger effect and talking about people of low ability, people of low aptitude or something. Like, wow, it's okay to write that. That's not a hate crime. It's not a hate speech to say that there are some people of low ability, low aptitude. Well, the fine line here is identity versus function. This is, very few people can get out of this confusion between non-judgmental discernment versus blame, devaluation, judging. Okay? They're not the same. Now, to say that this boy is 5'10" and that boy is 5'2" is no judgment. He's tall, he's not tall. Can you say he's tall? It's okay to say he's tall, because that doesn't mean he's better, but it's bad to say he's short, because that's now assumed to be he's bad. The problem is the conflation of identity and function. The conflation of identity and function. He's short. No, his height is short, and the other guy's height is tall. His body height is tall, his body height is short. His mental function is high, his mental function is low. their aptitude at this area, in this area is great, their aptitude, the other one's aptitude in the other, in that area is poor or low. Poor means low, you know. Poor means not rich. Rich means a lot of money. Poor means not a lot of money. But poor, he's poor, meaning he doesn't have a lot of money, has been conflated with he is a devalue. He is of low value. So the people who are, you know, to say he's short is already mistaken, even without political correctness concerns, because he is not his height. Identity is not the functions of that identity. So there's love, wisdom, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth chakra activation. Yeah, there is a path. Yeah, there is higher and lower development, or greater or lesser development of chakras, particularly four, five, six, moral, love, harmlessness, or sensitivity, or a willingness to help others or be there for to benefit others. Five, intellect or intelligence or discernment or mental function, cognition, cognitive ability, logic, and intuition. And six, spiritual awareness or spiritual power or willpower or awareness of non-duality or, you know, the identity of self and other, or cosmic plan and metaphysical, physical, you know, interpenetration, karma, laws, and all that. There is indeed greater and lesser development of those three chakras. Yes, indeed, there really is. And that's what's, you know, there, you know, like today, I can accept this and love. I can love my enemies today in a way that I couldn't 30 years ago. Why? Because of some greater development of 4, 5, 6. Okay? But that doesn't mean I'm a better person. I may feel better, but it doesn't affect determination of identity or worth. And that's the real problem, is that function has been conflated with identity, or identity has been conflated or confused with function. He's smart, oh, he's good. He's rich, oh, he's good. He's tall and rich and handsome and smart and kind and aware, he's good. And the other ones that are not are bad. That's the problem. Meanwhile, like you're saying, if you don't know others well, you can't help them well. And knowing them well means discerning or measuring their development well. And that means seeing, getting some sense of another person's relative development or psychological condition, or, you know, their character, their tendencies, who they are, what they like, what they're all about, their strengths and weaknesses, where they're developed and where they're not, just as we ought to know ourselves that way. And so, this conflation of with a, let's just say the blurring of the line between discernment and judgment, meaning measurement versus blaming, is an outgrowth of the conflation between function and identity. How about that? And so, I am not my functions. I am that I am. The self is not the seven chakras. Hey. The seven chakras are is a relative functional vehicle. It's a vehicle for functional development of the one that uses it. Who is the one? The one is the one. The one is the logos. The one is the only one. There's only one of us here, as he said. And so, identity is the self with a capital S, which is, you know, what? God, the creator, the source, Paramatman, the union of Atman, Paramatman. The self is a being of infinite worth. So identity, the worth of one's true nature or true identity is infinite, said Ra. Yeah, okay, I can go on with that. So self is a being of infinite worth. Meanwhile, in manifestation, the seven chakra expression of that self, which is of infinite worth in its true nature identity, manifests quite differential development of various functions. And so he is not his height. He is not their level of their relative level of intelligence or awareness of social conditions. The sheeple are God. All everyone is God, you know, everyone is the one. But there is a scale or a spectrum of relative development of function. This is very not understood by most people. Very not. And I had to, I had to awaken some some sleeping adepts in the cave to get this download, and they were okay with it. But meaning, we identify ourselves with our functions, but we are not. You are not your body. You are not your mind. You are not the spirit complex either. You are, tat brahmasi. I am that I am. That's what the self that is of infinite worth is. Yet, in time and space, we have all these functions. And so political correctness is a kind of mental poison. It's a kind of mental cancer, actually. It's a cancerous pattern, a cancerous growth of self-repression, self-censorship. And it's very deep in the war on reason, as we said last week, the war on reason. So the war on reason uses as one of its weapons the political correctness tendency, which is ultimately, at least in this case, suppressive of discernment of relative functional development. Yeah, some people are smarter than others. Yep, some people are more loving than others. There are people more smart and loving than me, obviously. There are poor people more well-developed than all of us. In this world and in the others. And there are those of less development than us in this world and others too. And the poison or cancerous development, the cancerous tissue of cancerous cytology of political correctness leads people to judge themselves for discern to put for potentially simply measuring and discerning others' relative functional development. Because really, there is functional development, and actually, everybody wants it. And that goes back to the Iron Man archetypes, superhero configuration in fiction. Everybody really, human nature is superheroic. And so the superheroes of fiction or comic books and cartoons represent at best, they represent the best of human nature or human potential. Bravery, courage, fearlessness, selflessness, self-sacrifice, faith, trust, friendship, love, caring, discernment, knowing, seeing, powers. So all of their superheroic qualities represent, at best, the summit or high level of development of the human functions. But that's not the human nature, it's human function. But rather than humans being encouraged to express and develop their heroic qualities, the qualities of Atman, Atman is the true hero, right? The true charioteer. Rather than develop the qualities of Atman, the true charioteer, people have been taught to project their longing for superheroism or their own great development potential upon fictional characters and stars and celebrities. And so, you have less money and you can't travel, but you can go all over the world on your iPhone. Well, ain't that grand? And so you work at a lousy job or a job you hate, paid little, no future, but you're politically correct and you're progressive, and you can dream yourself a superhero in your video games, create and destroy worlds and repopulate and do eco management of planets and solar systems. In your free time, from your, job at the fast food joint. Cool. And so the constriction, the oppression of society, and the destruction of potential, or the increasing cramping of human potential, by, socioeconomics, let's just say, as one of many. is associated with then leading people to fantasy superheroism, while it's those qualities of human nature or human function that we really admire and respect and would love to develop, you know? Within every sleeper is a superhero. Within in every soul is, you know, boundless potential. And the political correctness, war on discernment, actually blurs the whole a useful focus upon qualities of human nature that we really would be well to develop, that would lead us to feel more well with ourselves and with the world and with life, should we or do we, if we continue developing, or if we develop at all. Yeah, it's called vicarious learning, like a simulator. I learn to fly the plane by a simulator, so when I'm in the real physical plane, I can do it quite well because I've practiced, and I'm more and more familiar with what's needed or those qualities, as you're saying. So yes, absolutely. It's a positive sign that there are movies showing archetypal heroic qualities, for sure. I think we can point out that process, those dynamics, like you're bringing up. You can point those out to somebody that we're observing in the process of, you know, breaking out of their shell, like an egg or a chick, and help them understand that it's inevitable, that it'll be painful to change our views. You know, change. What does change mean, even, right? All these words, they're so easy to use. No pain, no gain. Well, what's the gain? Improvement. What improvement? Mental, moral, fourth, fifth, sixth chakra improvement. Well, what does that look like? Well, it looks like accepting what you couldn't accept, right? Like 2150, accepting the unacceptable. It looks like knowing what you didn't know, or accepting that indeed certain truths, certain things are true that you thought were not true, or that you were fooled, or that your trusted advisor is a liar, or simply misinformed, or doesn't know everything, or daddy and mommy are not perfect. The pain, you know, disillusionment. Breaking illusions or losing the comfort of illusory beliefs or false beliefs or mistaken beliefs or assumptions about anything, about the world, about ourselves, about our loved one, whatever. And, you know, there's also the pain or the fear that's a form of pain associated with coming to non-duality. I mean, people have a fear of letting go in meditation, because I feel like I'm going to be destroyed, or I'm going to dissolve, or I won't stand up, won't be able to function in my day if I dwell in samadhi or something. Or power of the fear, the pain of the fear of moving into real empowerment, which is not power over, but it seems like power over, or dangerous for some people, or for us at some times. It's dangerous to speak my mind, or it's dangerous to feel good about myself when I've always felt that I should take their blame and criticism and shut up and, you know, say nothing in return. So there's lots of pain on the path, and that's just the way it is. And so we can help people with that understanding if they are able, but you have a big thing here. This is the back to the discussion of self-esteem and wisdom. And so, second chakra, fifth chakra, where by the quality of self-esteem or self-worth, by the relative development of self-worth or the spiritualization of self-esteem, meaning I'm not just body-mind, or I'm not just my problems, or I'm not just my limitations, I also am beyond that, or of greater potential, or greater true nature, the limits to wisdom, discernment, or the ability to hear constructive criticism, or to hear any teaching, or any instruction, or any guidance at all, limited by low self-esteem or self-doubt. So, like the quote, I don't want to hear bad things about my... I don't want to go into therapy because I don't want to hear bad things about myself. Well, when the sense of self is weak or associated with low self-value. That's what a weak, you know, low self-esteem means, a low self-value, it seems to me, low self-worth, unworthiness complex, as a basis of all sorts of harmful patterns or as a core belief, a core mistaken belief, a core mistaken assumption, wrong belief, I'm no good, I'm a failure, I'm weak, I'm little, I'm, you know, just my body, I'm just this mind, whatever. I'm all the bad things that may be true, and no more. I am my faults, not more than that. Meaning no recognition of strengths or positive qualities or potential or true nature. That makes it hard to explain to people how growth happens. And so, you know, that's why in general, I mean, that's why Ross said we'd simply help them sleep more comfortably. If somebody doesn't want to know, we ought to become, you know, make peace with them not wanting to know. But Jesus overturned the money changers' tables in the temple. So he wasn't okay with them just being that way. But we're not Jesus. But why? Because he was making a public statement or bringing the, you know, using the sword he brought, as he said he did. Sometimes we need to do that too. Or sometimes we may feel it's the right thing to do, to call out hypocrisy or negativity or harmfulness in, you know, the activity or speech or of the other. So, you know, the way of learning service is the way of self-healing and further self-development. The way of developing love wisdom, resting upon deeper self-healing, is the way of learning service, I would say. Yeah, there may be some sense, I don't want to buy what you're selling because it doesn't make me feel better, even if it's true. And that's fine. I think, you know, it's again back to, you know, the life and works of Jesus, Buddha, and Nityananda as an example, whereby they're focusing on teaching individuals who are committed to their own transformation. They're not committed to rectification of society or the collective. They'd like to, I mean, they help individuals who can help the collective. They talk about right relations, right speech, right action, right livelihood. But they're not social reformers as much as they are teachers to individuals on the way. And if we adopt that attitude towards ourselves, we are learners of the way, or seekers, or we're just souls on the path. And that's job number one. Then we're less emotionally invested in fixing others or helping others even. I mean, it's good to help others, sure, but the basis of its of the capacity or the quality of our service or helping others is totally dependent on the development of our own being or the development of, you know, our seven chakra system, our mind, body, spirit, particularly mind. And so, I mean, I had that sense personally from the start, feeling great angst at the collective, very confused as to why it was, you know, why I was feeling such angst. What is this collective? What are they doing? What the hell's going on here that I'm feeling so much angst? And what's going on in me that I'm feeling so much angst? Turning in and basically, you know, separating from the world to some degree by dropping out of college repeatedly and living in monasteries and doing the greatest separation, which is meditation, which is detachment, which is separating from the transient, from samsara, birth and death, the arising and passing away of mind, of you know, contents of mind and body, even feelings, emotion, sensation, thoughts, memory, image, fantasy, all that, being okay to let it go a little bit, and simply watch or be mindful, that detachment then as a basis for a lifestyle which everybody needs to refine for themselves, of careful engagement or limited engagement, and we all do that, right? We don't hang out with everybody. We don't hang out for 20 hours on end with anyone. We have our other priorities. At some level, the saying, it's every man for himself, is really quite true in 3D, more than people realize. And the green ray overlay of the present time gives us a kind of bias of love over wisdom in our understanding of everything, right action included, and service, and a sense of responsibility. What is our responsibility? And when Don asked Ra, it seemed to me, were two quite clear categories. The first was genuine responsibility to self and path, and our purpose for being here. And the second level, seemed to me, was more optional in terms of responsibility to the collective. Responsibility to the individual is ultimately the golden rule, to treat them as we wish to be treated and not do to them what we wouldn't want them to do to us. And that's at the heart of the path, because self and other are one, or how you treat the other is how you treat the self. Meanwhile, the collective is a different kettle of fish, I think. And it's really, batter's choice or fielder's choice, whether you want to throw the ball to second or third or first, go this way, go that, more engaged, less engaged. But I think the primary responsibility is to path, which is really self and other individuals that cross our path or that come into our life or are in our lives. That's of a qualitatively different metaphysical responsibility, I think, than responsibility or engagement with the collective. And I think that's what I see in the lives and works of Gautama, Yeshua, and Nityananda. Their primary commitment to path and others in their lives on their own path. Social reform was really secondary, because it all starts from the individual anyway. So anyway, thank you again. Very interesting discussion, a lot of food for thought, and I hope it was helpful. So please take good care of yourselves. See you next time, and good night.